Lecture 24, Language Interrupted.
Now that we've seen that languages are more complex than they need to be, we can look at something about language contact that is not often thought a whole lot about, even in academia, but which is very important. And that is that when languages come into contact, not only is there mixture, but often this complexity gets broken down. Language contact tends to keep languages from overgrowing as much as they would otherwise. And another way of looking at this is that language complexity is correlated with the degree to which languages have come into contact and what kind of contact there has been. And the way to understand this is to look at some extremes. But basically, there are no simple languages. And languages aren't simple even if they don't have the long tables of endings that we're familiar with from European languages. So, for example, the rule of thumb is that if a language doesn't have endings that we're familiar with, then chances are it's going to have tones, and often a lot of them. And that's a different way of being complex. Then there are the numeral classifiers, like two head of cattle. Then there are the evidential markers. Then there's the inalienable possession, and all the other features that we see. There are many, many ways for a language to be complex. It's kind of a grab bag, and any language grabs from at least some of those features, and usually quite a few. So, that's basic. However, there's a truism in linguistics, which I think is gradually breaking down, but still students are exposed to it, which is that all languages are equally complex. If you look into language study, you're highly likely to find somebody quite authoritatively saying all languages are equally complex. And so if English doesn't have as many endings as German, we have a wrinkle like the fact that we have to say, do you want to go to the store? He didn't go to the store. He does do that. That use of do is very peculiar in English. So it's often thought that for some reason languages balance out in terms of complexity. But then notice that I've mentioned often that there are 6,000 languages in the world. All of them are not even documented in any real way. No linguist has occasion to study thousands of languages. Generally, when it's said that all languages are equally complex, it is not an important point. You'll usually find it said in an introduction or something. And really, no linguist has looked at every language in the world to assess that. That's usually said because it's a kind of politically correct view of languages, especially since most of the world's languages are spoken by people who are not in tortured first world overdeveloped cultures like ours. But the truth is that all languages are complex. They're not all equally complex. And this is becoming clearer and clearer to a small group of linguists who are actually looking at the issue. And for whatever it's worth, it's natural to think that the more advanced a society is, the more complex its language will be, when in fact it's the opposite. If you're dealing with a society that has to be reached on a very small road, and then you're cutting through the forest with a machete, and you go, and they're in a clearing, and there are only 300 of them, and they point at helicopters in fascination, that sort of thing. That group is likely to have a language so complicated that you cannot imagine anybody being able to actually speak it. If you're talking about a language that's spoken by people with tall buildings and sending text messages over their phones and watching television and going to bars, chances are that language, as languages go, is relatively streamlined. All languages are complex. The most complex ones are spoken in far-off places by small, obscure groups of people. So, let's take an example of that sort of thing. There is a language. There's a language in the Caucasus region of Asia, in the mountains, and it's called Tsez, T-S-E-Z, Tsez. Tsez is spoken by about 14,000 people. Tsez is basically an oral language. It isn't written much. It's a spoken language, small group of people. You've probably never heard of them. This is the sort of language where your antennas immediately go up. You know this is going to be a nightmare. This is going to be a very hard language. And indeed it is. So, for example, just sounds alone. If you have a language that's been learned as a second language by a whole lot of people, then chances are that it's not going to have very many sounds that are hard to pronounce. And that's because as you get older, older meaning, say, over 13, it gets hard to mimic exactly the sounds in a language that you encounter. And on the other hand, if you're talking about a language where very few people have ever learned it from the outside, then sounds are allowed to ingrow like toenails, and they get more and more specific and complicated because only babies learn the language, and babies have these amazing skills of language acquisition. So it says, not only has the easy sounds like the buzz and the kuz and the ez and the ahs, but it has all sorts of sounds that are relatively rare in the world's languages that are harder to produce and harder to mimic for adults. So, for example, there is a word for to be afraid, and the way the word is rendered, and of course, my tzez is rusty. You know, we spoke it at home, but, you know. So I, of course, am going to approximate this, but the word for to be afraid is, and that's literally the way it goes. So it starts out with not a glottal stop like the as in uh-oh, but it's further back in the throat. So it's like that. And so the first segments of it are, then the next consonant is what's called a lateralized fricative, and it's kind of like that. So it's not a l, it's not a r, it's not a childish sound, it's, and you just do that. And so, and then there's a glottal stop. So you have to make the difference between and so it's, and that's the word for to be afraid. And that's an ordinary word. Nobody in says giggles at that word. That's normal. These are the sorts of sounds there are. And it's full of this sort of thing. All sorts of sounds made there. For example, there are various sounds, not just one, various sounds made by wobbling your uvula. That's that fleshy, pendulous thing in the back of the mouth that is funny in a cartoon. Well, that can be used to make sounds. Now, some of us are probably capable at a party of wobbling our uvula and entertaining the toddlers. Most of us aren't. If you are a Tzezian, you have to wobble your uvula all day long, every day. So, in addition, Tzez has gender. Not just two, not just masculine and feminine, not just three, like in German, you have four. And the four genders include a masculine class and a feminine class, but feminine isn't only things in dresses. It also contains objects that are flat or pointed. Now, presumably there's some reason why in the early spiritual system of the Tzez. No one knows now, but papers, pencils, and women. You just have to know. Then there is a gender that has animals and other stuff. You just have to know. Then there's another gender that just has a whole bunch of stuff, and it's just kind of the grab bag. And the gender marker is not attached to the noun, but it's attached to the verbs and the adjectives or the adverbs that are associated with the noun. And so, for example, a mother is usually feminine. So if you want to say that the mother was afraid, then what you say, and the word for mother is any. Then you say any, and then you put your y gender marker before the word for afraid. And we just met the word for afraid. And so the mother was afraid of is any, no. And that's how you do that. Then if you're the son, then you're in the gender class where you use a b prefix. And so buk bainosi, the sun rose. And then if the day warmed up, the day is in the grab bag class, and that has an r that you put before the verb. So tatanu rudi ro. Oh, and the little two sounds there were uvular. I'm not a uvular wobbler, but something like oh, and these are different sounds. So if you can wobble your uvula, that's good. But then these people do it in many subtly different ways. So that's says. And then there's another weird wrinkle. The gender markers only happen when the word begins with a vowel. So if the word begins with a consonant, then the rule is that you leave it off. So girl happens to be kid, not as in kid, it's just an accident. But if the girl knows, then the kid, yes, and you have the y. But if the girl believes, then it's just kid, and then bojiji yo. There is no y because it begins with a consonant. So the rules get that picky. In a way, the exception is the rule. So it has gender, but then you only mark the gender when the following word begins with a vowel. This is a very complex language. Now, when that person tells you all languages are equally complex, usually they don't know anything about Tzez. And Tzez is part of a whole family of languages just like this. Clearly, there's something different here than in English, although English is complex too. Tzez, of course, has case markers too. So we've got the kind of Latin thing. But they tend to be very irregular. So in English, we have irregularities like child and then children. And there's no reason, you just kind of have to know. You have goose and geese and person and people. But there are only so many words like that. There are no new words like that. Once you learn the group of words that are like that, and how often do you talk about a goose anyway, you don't find that there are new words coming into the language where things like that happen. So there's a fax. The plural of it is not fex. You know, it's immediately faxes. All new words just take the good old S. But in Tzez, this kind of irregularity is all over the place. So the word for fish, and I chose a word without any of these sounds, so no more is just besuro. Besuro, fish. That sounds like some Spanish word. Besuro. So besuro is fish. Now, if you want to say that something belongs to the fish, if it's the fishes, then believe it or not, it's besuros. And this is another one of these odd little English parallels. So that's good. And then if you want to talk about fishes, although usually in English the plural is fish, then it's besuro bi. Now, that's a regular noun in Tzez, but regular nouns in Tzez are almost the exception. Tongue is giri. Now, it should be that if you're going to talk about the tongues, like the tongue's surface, then it should be giris. But no, it's giri mos, and that mo just comes from Mars. It's just there, and you have to know. There's no reason. And then tongues should be, if fishes is betsurobi, then tongues should be giri bi. But instead, it's giri ma bi. And not mopi, like before with the tongues, just ma. No reason, you just have to know. The word for water is hi, like that. Now that's fine. But then, waters is not lis, but it's las, for no reason. And then waters is lidabi. And lots of nouns do that sort of thing. And of course, a Tzez speaker doesn't think about it, but this sort of thing is very important in speaking the language and makes it very difficult to learn the language. Then Tzez has something else which I could not let this whole course go by without describing, and so this is a good place to slip it in. It's something very common in languages of the world, but quite foreign to a European, and it is this. There are languages, and Tzez is one of them, where there are two different kinds of subject. On the one hand, if you say, the girl washed the dress, the girl is really doing something. She's bending over and washing that dress, and the dress comes out cleaner. But if you say, the girl knows, well, it's a subject, but she's not really doing anything. For one thing, there's no object, and she probably can't help knowing. If you ask somebody, what are you doing? They don't sit and say, I'm knowing. You know, what are you doing? I'm thinking. You know, those are things that just kind of happen. Whereas you would say, I'm washing the dress. In many languages, that difference is important. And so if you're an active kind of subject, then the subject gets an ending, which it does not get if you're just kind of sitting there knowing. And so if the girl knows, then kid, yes. And that's it. Kid is just all alone. The kid sits by herself knowing, kid. But then if the girl washes the dress, and washes the dress is geresaisi, then instead of kid geresaisi, it's kidba geresaisi. And that ba just means that she's a subject that's really doing something, really affecting something. You're painting something, you're kicking something, you're cooking something, you're washing it. But that has to be marked. That's called ergativity. And a great many languages in the world are ergative. That's normal to a great many people. To us, a subject is a subject. But to many people in the world, that is really kind of like chopping a tomato with a machete. You have to specify what kind of subject. Now, this is another way in which languages overgrow. Obviously, that's not necessary, but it is something very common in the languages of the world. And Tzez has this. So obviously, Tzez is a very, very complicated language. And yet, people speak this every day without effort. You would literally imagine that nobody could speak this and do something else. You'd assume that if anybody could do it, then they couldn't cook, you know, they'd have to stop walking. It'd be this feat. But no, they walk around doing it. You imagine they're Tzez drunks who are laying in the Tzez gutter speaking this language, you know, slurring, but still using all these endings, etc. That is quite amazing. Or also the old joke about the person who goes to France and marvels that even the children speak French. Well, there are Tzez kids, 7 and 8 years old, running around. And for them, none of this is at all difficult. This is what real languages are like. Tzez is a little extreme, but just a little. And a great many languages are like this. You go somewhere, and there might be a hint in the back of your head that it's going to be boonga, 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 because it's a culture that doesn't have tall buildings. But no, it's going to be this sort of thing most of the time. It's been said that the Native American languages Cree and Ojibwa are so complex that children don't really speak the language till they're about 10. And so even when you're 8 or 9, you're still, it's not goo-goo, but you haven't really got the whole thing till you're 10, as opposed to English speakers, where by the time you're 6, you're pretty much talking and nobody has to slow down. You've got the idioms, you've got a sense of humor. It takes longer in many of the smaller languages of the world. So that's what a language is. Then there is what a language can be on the other extreme when contact comes into play. So, an example of this, which has only gotten around in any real way over the past few years, is one dialect of Indonesian. Indonesian is spoken, by the way, in Indonesia. And it's a dialect called Riau Indonesian. And Riau Indonesian is spoken in a region of the island of Sumatra. And it is a bizarrely simple language. Now, standard Indonesian seems normal. It's got a rather complex kind of prefixation and suffixation. It has a variation on active versus passive, which is quite counterintuitive to the newcomer. So standard Indonesian is quite normal. But while Tzez makes you wonder how anybody could speak it without having an aneurysm, with Riau Indonesian, you wonder how anybody could speak it and be understood, because there's just so very, very little in it. So, no endings. You know, no endings of any substance. No tones. There are no articles. There's no word order. You can put things in any order you feel like it. Context will take care of it. There is only a little bit of indicating things in time. Really, for the most part, they leave tense unmarked. You might want to say already, or you might want to say tomorrow if explicitness is desired. And they've got a couple of markers, but they don't use them very much. And so it's not as extreme as the New Guinea example that I talked about before, but it's close. There's no verb to be. The same word means he, she, it, and they. So there's just this one third-person word. Very, very little. And so context is everything. I mean, you almost think that nobody could speak this language unless they basically were standing right in front of somebody having all the same experiences, mirroring their movements like Lucy and Harpo Marx, because everything is context. So, for example, ayam is chicken, makan is eat. So ayam makan. This is becoming a mildly famous example in the linguistics world. It's the chicken eat example. So ayam makan. Now, that can mean the chicken is eating. It can mean that the chicken ate. It can mean that the chicken is going to eat. It can mean that the chicken is being eaten. It can mean that the chicken is making somebody eat. It can mean somebody is eating for the chicken. It can mean that chicken over there that is eating. It can mean where the chicken is eating. It can mean when the chicken is eating. It can mean how that chicken eats. Ayam makan. All based on context. Because, let's face it, spoken language tends to be bound in context. You don't usually stand in a valley and shout out ayam makan. Presumably, if you utter that sequence, there's a chicken somewhere interacting with food in some way, and you were all looking at it anyway. So presumably you can get away with that. But still, it's a very unusual state for a language to reach. Now, why would that be? Languages always complexify, as I've stressed, and so there's no reason why some language would basically run into the ground the way that one had, unless something unusual had happened. And it wasn't an asteroid, it wasn't a controversial election count or anything like that. It was actually learning this language as a second language. That is what did it. It's spoken in a region where people who spoke various languages related to Indonesian have come together over the centuries. And what this has meant is that Indonesian has been being used much more as a second language than as a first language in this area. Just like we sweat through our language learning classes, the adult anywhere in the world has trouble with such things. Now, they wouldn't think of it as trouble. The fact is that needing to learn the language completely is kind of a hobby, kind of a Western obsession. As long as you can get along, you're doing fine. And so people would come to this region, and as far as they were concerned, learn Indonesian. But it was not Indonesian in its complete sense. It was still viable for communication. The people who live in this Riau region are just fine and have thriving, nuanced lives and relationships. But still, it was not the Indonesian of the past. It's not the Indonesian that is captured on the page that one learns today if it's Indonesian. So the languages that these people spoke natively are typically complex, full of prefixes and suffixes and marking of active and passive, just like regular Indonesian. They tend to be more complex than regular Indonesian, as a matter of fact. But these people did not learn Indonesian completely. And as a result, what this is a kind of an abbreviated Indonesian, which is fine as a human language, but it became the way it was because of a kind of a train wreck. It got interrupted. People didn't learn it well, and as a result, it became a new kind of language. That kind of simplicity would never occur independently. So there's no such thing as a language that just kind of takes the route of becoming naked. Languages, if you let them go, are like the cat. For example, my cat always climbs into that suitcase. She does not climb out of it. I always have to take her out, and she goes, meow, because she wants to stay. If I didn't take her out of it, she would sit there until she needed to go to her litter box. I think she'd stay in the box for 2 hours. There'd be no reason for her to do it. The process only goes in one direction. Cat climbs up onto the bed and stays in the suitcase. So languages are always complex. So Riau Indonesian is one of the simplest languages in the world. And then Cez is one of the most complicated languages in the world. And then there are the intermediate cases. So Mandarin Chinese is an intermediate case. Mandarin has four tones. And on the other hand, Cantonese, down in the south, has six. Or if you want to analyze it in a way that you get a more impressive sounding number, you could say nine. Then that's two of seven Chinese languages, and the other five all have many more tones than Mandarin. There are ones where no matter how you count it, you've got seven, you've got eight tones. That's typical. Mandarin is kind of the odd one. Its sounds are simpler. A Mandarin syllable, and most words are one syllable. Mandarin syllable can only end in n or ng, and so you have n or ng, and that's it. You can't end in m, you can't end in p, b. You only have those two consonants that something can end in. Whereas in Cantonese, a word can end in six different consonants. You can have p, t, k, m, n, and ng. So Mandarin has this kind of lesser sound system as well. The sentence final particles that we talked about in Cantonese that convey attitude, Cantonese has about 30 of those. Mandarin, depending on how you count it, only has about six. In general, if you are going to learn a Chinese language, Mandarin is going to give you the least trouble. Mandarin is the easy one of the Chinese languages. And this is not just an accident. As it happens, Mandarin formed in a place and time where a lot of non-Chinese speakers were brought into the northern region of China. They spoke Tibetan and related languages, Mongolian and related languages, which are quite unlike Chinese or anything Sinospheric, to refer to a previous lecture. And so these people were brought in the several hundreds of thousands, and they intermingled with speakers of early Mandarin. And as a result of this, the Chinese language developed up there was a little less complex than the Chinese languages that developed normally down in southern China. So in a way, Mandarin, although it's very much a full language and certainly has many complexities, is a kind of abbreviated Chinese. In this case, the abbreviation was not so extreme as in the Riau Indonesian case, but it was intermediate. When you see a language with four tones when all of its sister languages have eight and nine, you know that something happened. A language typically does not decide, well, I don't feel like being so tonal, and then just kind of knocks it off. You can imagine even intuitively, little Timmy or little Ling, if he starts not using a tone, he's going to be corrected. You know, why aren't you speaking the language properly? If everybody else is using lots of tones, one person who decides that he's going to be kind of tone deaf is either going to be weird or shape up. That's not the way things happen. If a language simplifies radically, something's odd. If everybody allowed that to happen, to put a value judgment on it that actually makes no sense, then something happened to intermediate. So you see things like that all over the world. There is Swahili among the Bantu languages. The Bantu languages are spoken in sub-Saharan Africa, and there are hundreds of them. Swahili is spoken in Eastern Africa, and it's a lingua franca in many of the countries. In fact, for hundreds of years, Swahili has been spoken much, much more as a second language than as a first language. Only a small little community of Muslims speak Swahili as a first language. So until rather recently, you tended not to be in the cradle learning Swahili. It was always being approached by people whose first languages were something else. And so, as a result, Bantu languages are tonal, and we're talking about what is usually counted as about 500 languages. Swahili is one of the only ones that has no tones. That immediately sets you off. Why would one of them not have any tones? Swahili is a relatively easy language. Irregular constructions, for example, are almost oddly rare. When somebody takes Swahili in school, they really don't have that many problems. There are no sounds that are hard to pronounce. There's very little irregularity. It is a beautiful language that reminds one of nice, bright building blocks when you're little, and they kind of smell like wood, and they're painted bright colors, and they go together, and they kind of go when you put them together. That's Swahili. That's odd. Languages aren't that nice. You know, languages are supposed to be tzes, and you wonder. And the minute you try to learn another Bantu language, if you think, well, you know, Swahili was a party, so I'm going to try Zulu. Oh, good Lord. Then you get a real language. It's tonal. It's got sounds that are hard. In that case, the click sounds that you have to master. It's got all sorts of irregularities. It's something that clearly has been sitting on a shelf and kind of stewing for a long time. Swahili's tidiness is because so many people learned it as a second language that it became easier. It became simplified. So Swahili is kind of the Mandarin of the Bantu group. It is less tzes-esque than the other languages. So basically, it's normal for languages to be awesomely complex. It's not that, boy, that language is complicated. It's really, boy, that language isn't complicated. That's when you're supposed to have the question. A human language, if a Martian could fly down and zero in on any group of people and zeroed in on some small group, then the first thing he would encounter is likely a tzes. In some situations, the language is not like that, and that's generally because that language got beat up by being learned by a whole group of other people. Generally, a language is passed on, only learned by infants and toddlers, and spoken by small groups of people. And as a result, it's passed on in the best way by people who have the amazingly plastic learning abilities of the child. When that's possible, you get tzes. Us having to learn so many other languages, either as a hobby or because of how easy immigration has become, that's kind of new. And that has had a destructive effect upon the tzesian complexity. Of course, there's no value judgment on this. It's not that there's something wrong with English and not being as complex as tzes, but for a language to be as approachable as Mandarin, Swahili, or, as we'll see in the next lecture in why, English, is an irregular situation. And then simplification can go even beyond that. and you get something like Riau Indonesian or Creoles, which we'll talk about in the near future. But for now, the lesson is that it's ordinary for languages to be back-breakingly, frighteningly, counterintuitively complex.